From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Suddenly, redistricting is grabbing headlines, the once-a-decade process in the news as Texas Republicans are trying to push through a map to give them more congressional seats. Democrats have fled elsewhere, including to Illinois, to try to prevent a vote. We'll talk about that situation and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie has also been a longtime reporter and observer. And our guest this week is Alex Degman. He's a State House reporter for WBEZ and Illinois Public Radio. And Alex, always good to have you back on the show with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So I want to make clear we are recording this show on Friday morning. This story may change, may not change, but it certainly could change rather quickly. We're watching that. You've been watching this all week, Alex. So kind of give us an update. These Texas lawmakers, I think there's over two dozen of them that are in the state of Illinois, sort of taking refuge from Texas, trying to prevent this vote on this map. Where do things stand as of Friday morning?
We kind of knew that this was coming. We knew that this was going to be a possibility, but then it happened on Sunday night, and people were, at least I was kind of taken by surprise a little bit. So we have more than two dozen Texas Democrats who have essentially fled their state in order to put forth what's called a quorum break. And that basically means that they are denying the Texas legislature a quorum or a majority to conduct business. And they're doing this because they're in special session in Texas right now. They are trying to get enough legislators back to vote on a new congressional map that was drawn at the request of President Trump. President Trump is concerned that the midterms may not go as well for Republicans as he would like. So he requested from Texas Governor Greg Abbott and the Texas legislature to redraw their congressional maps a little bit early, a good 5 years early, in order to try to eke out five more Republican seats. And that would, of course, eliminate several Democratic seats in the process. This, as you might imagine, did not go over well in Texas. There is a very large and concerted effort to sort of round up these lawmakers and bring them back to Austin. And the reason that they left the state is because if they're still in Texas, law enforcement can compel them to return to Austin. That's something that they're allowed to do. But if they leave the state, Texas authorities don't have really any jurisdiction here. This is Illinois, and Texas doesn't have jurisdiction here, obviously. But that's not stopping people in Texas from trying anyway. You've got folks in Texas like Senator John Cornyn, a Republican, sending letters to Kash Patel, the director of the FBI, asking for assistance in locating these folks and bringing them back. The problem is the FBI can locate these people, sure, but the Texas lawmakers haven't broken any federal laws that would mean that they can be arrested. So right now, where we stand as of this taping is the Texas lawmakers are still here. They're still trying to get a quorum. And if I'm remembering correctly, and this is the problem, this is the problem with taping on a Friday, I think they're going to try to establish a quorum again today. Now, I'm not sure specifically about what the rules on Texas state about when a map needs to be passed, but I do know that there has been talk about whether they can stay out of the state long enough for national Democrats to come up with a plan. Because as you've heard from Democrats across the country, J.B. Pritzker has been one of the loudest about this. Democrats think that this mid-cycle redistricting is cheating, and they think that the game has kind of changed at this point. So it's not necessarily about following the rules, as you'll hear a lot of Democrats say. It's about fighting fire with fire. It's about going to the level that they're at. You're going to see, I think, a lot of states, possibly Illinois included, states like New York, states like California, perhaps Massachusetts. If Texas goes through with this map, it's probably going to be full steam ahead for some other Democrat states trying to do the same thing.
Charlie, that term cheating, I heard that from Democrats, too. And I don't know. I mean, I think about that and I think, well, certainly we look at what Illinois has done, many other states. It's all about how they divide the population up. It's not as though they're trying to fool with the numbers in a way that would be somehow underhanded. It's just creating a new map. So, I mean, again, I don't know. Is cheating a strong word here?
I don't think so, in the sense that, after every decennial census, the legislature will come in and redistrict, draw new maps for the state, for congressional seats, and for House, state House and Senate seats. And they do it in the year that ends in one. And in Illinois, we've had gerrymandered maps like forever. And many other states have too. But the distinction is Texas is trying to do this midterm, not after a census, but they're trying in essence to go back and redo what they did in, I suppose, 2021 when they enacted these maps to try and create more Republican districts. And that's, I think, what is considered cheating. I mean, I look at it as being a sense of cheating as well, because you take the census every 10 years, and after the census, you redraw the maps based on the population changes within your state in that preceding decade. And to do it midterm like this in the middle of a 10-year period strikes me as being improper. And so that, I think, is where the argument is. And so as Alex said, the Democrats, a lot of them are saying, well, if Texas rejiggers its map to give Republicans five more seats, then California should do the same thing and give Democrats five more seats. Now, it's been mentioned in Illinois, but I honestly don't think it'd be possible to create any more Democratic districts in Illinois, in part because the Republican districts are so Republican. To try and change the lines, you would be taking away votes from incumbent Democrats, some of whom may be threatened if they lose those votes. So I think it's a lot of talk. In Illinois, it's not going to happen, but it is going to happen conceivably in California. And also, I saw the other day there was a story where J.D. Vance was in Indiana to try and encourage, with the support of the Indiana governor, to try and encourage the Indiana legislature to redraw the map to eliminate the only Democratic congressman from Indiana.
So, Alex, the governor, he's had several events this week. The Illinois State Fair has gotten underway, so he's talked to reporters a lot. You've been there to hear what he's had to say and talk with him. Has he alluded to what Illinois and the Democrats' plan might be here in the state?
A little bit. We are starting to ask in the press corps about, you know, how serious this effort is, because as Charlie mentioned, it's going to be really difficult to get any more Democratic districts out of a state that's already drawn really to benefit Democrats. So what we're trying to figure out now is where does the legislature stand on this? Because really, it's going to be a joint venture between the governor and the legislature to get anything like this done. And right now, it doesn't seem like there is a lot of interest to consider this in Illinois, but it also doesn't seem like there's no interest in Illinois. I would say this is one of those situations where the governor's not really going to tip his hand all that much. He kind of wants to keep things, I guess, for lack of a better term, drama filled, I suppose. It seems kind of weird to put it that way, but really, that's what we've seen a lot of this week. It's been a lot of political back and forth. It's been a lot of drama. And if you have that, the issue stays in the news cycle. And if you have that, people are talking about it. And this continues to dominate what people are talking about in politics. So, you know, whether, you know, whatever J.B. Pritzker's ambitions are, whether he really wants to be seen as the leader of this effort of trying to stand up against Texas Republicans and really the Trump administration, or whether he's doing this for other reasons, protecting Illinois or elevating his own national profile. It's just been a really interesting week, and I think you're going to continue to see him talking about this.
Yeah, Charlie, he's definitely, if he's wanting to be looked at as the guy standing up to Donald Trump, he is leaning into it for sure this week. He was on late night TV with Stephen Colbert at one point earlier in the week. So, I mean, it's, you know, I don't doubt that the governor feels strongly on this issue, but he's also seeing a political opportunity. Would you agree?
Yeah. And if I could add to what Alex said, I think the chances of Illinois doing something are pretty slim to none. And part of the reason is you have to look at the logistics of it all. candidates for these offices have begun circulating petitions. And so the what would you say, the cycle is already underway with the existing district lines. And so for the lines to be changed, the governor would have, or the legislative leaders would have to call a special session. The legislature would have to agree with extraordinary majorities to enact a new map for the governor to sign that would be effective before January 1st. That's why you need the extra votes in the Senate and the House. And then what do you do with the petitions that have been circulated? And let's say I sign a petition for somebody in Representative Baczynski's district, and suddenly that gets changed into a new district. Is my signature still valid when I sign and I'm no longer in the district that I'm signing for? You just have all kinds of like technical problems doing it, which is why I don't think it'll happen. And to your question, yeah, Pritzker is being very outspoken, more so than most Democratic governors, although I don't know for sure because I don't follow that closely what Newsom is saying, what Hochul is saying. But he's certainly taken the fight to the Texas Republicans, and he's used a little bit of kind of a little humorous. One of the things that I saw, and I'll read his quote, and this is when Senator Cornyn got the FBI to say, yes, we're going to locate these people. And I'm thinking to myself, locate them? We know exactly where they are, so that's not a challenge. I could locate them. But Pritzker said that he's called this grandstanding by Trump. And he said, the reality is, all that he has said is that the FBI has been authorized to locate the Texas House Democrats, nothing more. And you know why? There is no federal law that allows them to arrest Texas Democrats who are here visiting the state of Illinois. And you were probably there when he said this, Alex. And he says, I welcome the FBI coming to the state. I hope they take in the state fair. I hope they go to see the beauty of Lake Michigan. The adventure awaits for all of them, but they won't be arresting anyone because there's no U.S. federal law that prohibits those Texas House Democrats from being here in the state of Illinois. And I'm thinking the idea of the FBI coming here, the FBI has offices in Chicago. I don't know how many agents there are, but FBI has been here like forever.
Well, Alex, I mean, one thing about Pritzker here, this is an opportunity for him politically, but it's also an opportunity for Republicans to say, hey, wait a minute. This is sort of the height of hypocrisy of a governor saying that the Texas legislature is trying to, you know, put a map together that's unfair when we look at what Illinois is. And I've always pointed out to people, I do think Illinois is a strong blue state, but I'm not sure it's as blue as the maps show all the time because of the way some of this is drawn. What's he had to say to the criticism he's received?
If you look at the vote totals in Illinois, especially if you look at something like the last presidential election, you're right. The state is honestly more Republican than the map makes it out to be. But when Pritzker is questioned about that, and when he is faced with criticism about that, his line of reasoning seems to be that we didn't draw the map specifically for Democrats. We didn't draw partisan maps. It just so happens that people are responding to Democratic policies and they're voting for Democrats. That's pretty much the line that he's putting. And I'll just be honest about this. I think that gerrymandering and like political map drawing, I think, is the worst political back and forth that exists. Because if you're allowed to do it, if there's a state that's allowed to do it, and some don't, like there are some states with rules against partisan gerrymandering, but if you're allowed to do it, you do it. That's what states do. And I find this whole back and forth about who's partisan gerrymandering worse. I find it boring. Because everybody does it. The criticism that Pritzker is getting is, I think it's pretty well-founded, because I think anybody that looks at this map can tell that this was drawn to favor Democrats. And anybody who's saying anything else, I don't know, you're probably not looking at the right map then.
It seems to me that a lot of the political extremism you often get is because of the way maps are drawn. I mean, in such a very safe district as, say, Darren LaHood in Central Illinois to be a Republican, you can take positions that maybe you wouldn't take otherwise if you thought this is going to really cost me. Or same for a Democrat who holds a seat that's very strong. So sometimes I think when they're drawn this way, this leads to a lot of what we're getting now at the national level. And apparently we're just seeing more of this type of maps drawn to benefit one party over the other. But your thoughts on what Pritzker has had to say in response?
Yeah, and I'll go back to what I said initially. You could argue that what Pritzker is so upset about is trying to do it midstream. And if you look at the history of maps in Illinois, when Democrats drew the map in 81, they controlled both houses for that decade. Republicans drew the map in 91, and they controlled the Senate for the decade. Now, Michael Madigan, the House Speaker, was able to win four of those five elections. But nonetheless, the map was drawn specifically to elect Republicans. And then when the Democrats got control again, they drew it to benefit themselves. And that's been the case like from day one. And I agree with Alex. Ideally, it should be done on a nonpartisan basis, taking into account maybe trying not to separate minority communities, and allow the districts to be as compact as possible instead of snaking all over the place. But I also would agree with Pritzker and others that there's no need for Democrats to unilaterally disarm themselves and say, we're going to do it fair, but we're going to let the Republicans gerrymander the dickens out of things and put ourselves at a disadvantage. What we need, in my judgment, we need Congress to come in and say, we're going to require districting to be done after the federal census only, not midstream, and we're going to require it to be done by some independent commission. And I'm not sure that will ever happen. And to go back, another thing that makes it difficult to get anything done is the U.S. Supreme Court has said, well, gerrymandering, no, that's not our business. If you want to do it, go ahead. So that's the court could have come in and stopped this too years ago, and they didn't. In a sense, the Texas Democrats are making a stand for principle, and good for them. But in the long run, I don't see how it's going to be operative, because the current session that Governor Abbott has called is due to end, I think, on the 19th of August. There's nothing to stop him from calling another special session and keep on going, you know, all the way until next year's election.
Well, we can, again, continue to follow this story and see if there's a resolution on it anytime soon. We'll certainly talk about it on next week's show as well. But let me move on now, because I mentioned earlier Darren LaHood, just threw him as an example. Darren LaHood's name, Central Illinois Congressman, Republican, this has come up a lot as a possible candidate for the U.S. Senate seat. There had been talk he might consider the statewide run, but now this week, Alex, he announced that he is going to be staying put, running for another term in the Illinois House. He's from Peoria, pretty safe district there. So what did LaHood have to say?
Right. Darren LaHood just basically said that he is ready to run for another term in Congress. He mentioned in his statement that there was a lot of talk of him possibly running for statewide office, whether that's U.S. Senate. He was also possibly mentioned in the race for governor against J.B. Pritzker, but he decided ultimately that Congress is where he needs to be. To be fair, I haven't really had a chance to poll Illinois Republicans about what they think about this, but Darren LaHood, for all intents and purposes, for a statewide office, he was a very attractive candidate to a lot of Republicans because he is pretty popular on both, both sides of the Republican aisle that is formed. He's pretty popular with the more conservative wing, and he's more popular with the so-called the donor class, I suppose. So he's able to walk that line and do things that make him pretty well liked in that district. He is very supportive of President Trump and President Trump's policies, and perhaps most importantly, he has the ability to raise money. At the end of the last reporting period, I believe he had almost $6 million in his war chest, which is pretty substantial considering the fact that you already have a Democratic field of U.S. Senate candidates like Raja Krishnamoorthy, who has nearly 13 million last time I checked, and Juliana Stratton, who's backed by J.B. Pritzker, a billionaire governor, and Robin Kelly, who also is really good at raising money by herself and has already started raising money for that race. So now you have a question of who on the Republican side in Illinois can raise that kind of money. And there's a pretty short list, and we'll probably talk about that at some point. But then on the other hand, Darren LaHood staying in Congress when there is a pretty there could be a big battle for control in 2026 is also fairly important to consider.
Yeah, and of course, LaHood is moving up the seniority ladder every time he wins a term. So, he's seeing that. His dad served in the House before he went on and served in the Obama administration, despite being a Republican. He was the transportation secretary, so a well-known name there. Charlie, I guess not a shock on this one, but we're still waiting to see, as Alex said, who else might jump into first, maybe the U.S. Senate race, but governor as well. We're at that time now. Petitions are being taken out. The former RNC National Committeeman Richard Porter, his name had come up a lot to run for Senate. He's not going to, apparently. So Don Tracy, former Illinois Republican Party chair, his name has creep back up. He was thinking of a gubernatorial bid against J.B. Pritzker. Now there's talk he may run for the Senate. So a lot of moving parts here, a lot of musical chairs going on.
Yeah, and to me, Darren LaHood deciding he's going to stay where he is no surprise at all. He did not want to be a sacrificial lamb. And what Alex says about him is true. He's a pretty popular guy, pretty affable guy. He's able to raise money, but he's going to be in a state, if he's running statewide, where he's not that well known outside of his district. He's not that well known in Chicago. And you can be pretty sure that whoever is running for Senate is going to have a lot of financial support from Governor Pritzker. And Darren LaHood is in a situation where he didn't even have an opponent last time out, and the time before that, he won with two-thirds of the votes. So he's basically his re-election to Congress is all but guaranteed. And as I said, running for statewide office, his loss would be pretty much all but guaranteed. So to me, that's no surprise. But yeah, there are a ton of people running. And part of it is with Durbin retiring and with four Congress critters retiring from the Chicago area, there's a kind of a rare opportunity for people to move up. And I think there's something like more than, I want to say, 60 some people have indicated interest in running for these seats, for the Senate or for the congressional seats. Most of them are Democrats because the Senate, you said, maybe would be a possibility that lightning could strike and a Republican could win. But the congressional seats are solidly blue and they're going to stay blue. And so there's the whoever wins the Democratic primary will be elected to Congress. But yeah, there's just a ton of candidates all over the place.
And Alex, it's been, I would say, a little boring at some of these political days at the state fair over the last few years. I mean, Democrats kind of, with a clean sweep in the in statewide offices and such, but you have all that, like Charlie said, a lot of these different people trying to run for, different seats in Congress, maybe looking at some of these high-profile statewide offices. A lot going on here. It should be a very interesting time. And the state fair is sort of an unofficial kickoff for the election. So you're going to certainly be having a lot to cover, it seems like, over the next few days.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, the last 3 years have been pretty tame in Illinois politics. I mean, for in a lot of ways. And I think this year we are already seeing a pretty big uptick in political issues. We are seeing a pretty big uptick, as you mentioned, people running for office. That's one of the things I really like about the state fair. It's that there's just so many people from all different parts of the state, and this is where everybody over the summer comes to, mingle and meet, and it's gonna be fun.
governor had been signing a lot of legislation. He's had a lot that he hasn't gotten to yet on his desk. But one of the things he signed involved the Mahomet Aquifer throughout central Illinois. This is a major drinking water source, and this has to do with the sequestration, pumping CO2 under the ground. This legislation got through the legislature with bipartisan support. Now the governor signed it. What does it do?
Well, basically what it says is that there can't be any carbon sequestration over, under, or through any portion of the Mahomet Aquifer. And it passed, as you said, it passed out without a whole lot of, opposition. And the argument that was made is that the Mahomet Aquifer, as you said, it's the only source of drinking water for parts of 14 Illinois counties, affecting something like a million people. And the opponent or the proponents of the sequestration says, well, this is a good way to handle all the CO2. We'll put it a mile underground beneath this rock and it was safe. And the opponent said, well, that may be true. And even if there's only a 5% chance that the carbon dioxide could leak upwards and infect the water, the consequences would be so dire that we can't run the risk.
Let's go now to our notes from the field, and Charlie, we'll stay with you first this week.
Well, the Illinois Flash Index fell slightly in July. It dipped down to 101.8 from 101.9 in June. Any reading above 100 indicates growth. And U of I Professor Emeritus Fred Gerrits, who compiles this index, said, quote, this mirrors the national economy, which remains remarkably stable amid both domestic and international uncertainty. The fears among economists about the negative consequences of tariffs have yet to materialize. And then the Commission on Government Financing and Accountability, the legislature's fiscal gurus, noted that for the first month of the current fiscal year, FY26, revenues deposited into the general funds slipped a tad, and they started off with an overall decline of $35 million compared to a year ago, and that's 0.9%, so it's nothing dramatic. Sales tax receipts grew, but personal income tax, corporate income tax dropped, and so obviously we're going to wait and see what happens moving forward. But we're off to a slow start.
All right. And Alex?
Well, the only other thing that I have covered this week besides Texas Democrats has been the start of the state fair. And we were talking about this a little bit before we started recording, Sean. But when I first moved here, it's been almost 10 years since I've lived in Springfield. When I first moved here, I had the idea in my head that it was just this, I don't want to go look at a bunch of cows. It's dirty. What am I going to do? Eat corn and pork? That's stupid. But now it's one of my favorite things of the year. And I could not be happier that it's back. It's one of my favorite things. And I do want to mention that at the news conference to cut the ribbon, Mayor Misty Buescher in Springfield had mentioned that it's really hard to get a hotel room in Springfield this weekend because of the state fair. And it took all I could do to not remind her that the Wyndham is shut down. Downtown, and that's also why people can't get a hotel room in Springfield. So that's my note from the field.
Well, now that you're a fan of the fair, you're coming around there, Alex, so we do appreciate that. So that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Illinois Public Radio's Alex Degman. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.